Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Sequel Unplugged. I'm your host, Scott Klein. With me as always, Sean Bias, Rohan Kumar. Gentlemen, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So, we've got a couple of great things to talk about today. Let's begin with what everybody's been a lot of excitement generated about, Sequel DW.
Yeah. Right?
Let's begin with that. What is Sequel DW? How do we get started with it? Why all the excitement around Sequel DW?
So, you know, Sequel DW is our Elastic Data Warehouse.
Yep.
You know, we always said from the beginning we wanted to take our PDW or APS technology, which if you need parallelism to do data warehousing and you don't want to do anything on-prem, you want to do it in the cloud, Sequel DW is for you.
Yep.
We said out of the gate that we heard from a lot of customers that we wanted it to be really affordable and very elastic. The affordable part basically means we have two billing concepts.
Your mic is off.
Oh, the mic is off. Let's see here. I don't think so.
Is that better?
Is that better?
Here, let's do it. Yeah, that should be on.
That should be on. Is this better or no?
Live shows.
Yeah, it should be. It should be on. But
okay.
I don't. All right, so let's just.
Let's keep going.
Anyways, we have two billing concepts.
Yep.
Compute and storage are separated. We have elasticity, which means if you can move a slider bar, you can scale compute. And then we have direct integration with things like Power BI.
Okay. So one of the things that we've heard a lot about Sequel DW is how easy it is to get going, and the Power BI integration. These are kind of, I think, the two key strengths. Is that true? I mean, that it's really super that easy to get started with it?
Yeah, that's. I mean,
now we see it.
Might as well just go straight to a demo.
This is the first, folks, on Sequel Unplugged. Live demos.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you
got the portal up here.
Yeah. If you go to the portal. So to new DW, just to show you how straightforward the experience is, just plus new over on the left.
Yep.
And then you can go to data and storage. And then, you know, here's all your choices. In this case, we're going to pick SQL Data Warehouse. Now, Scott, if you can walk us through this. This is how easy it is.
This is how easy it is. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to enter a name. So I'm going to call this SQL Unplugged.
Yep.
Did I spell that right? Unplugged DW.
Okay.
The performance. This is interesting.
Yeah, so the next thing on performance here, the way to sort of think about performance is through these data warehousing units. And the data warehousing units just really speak to the mental model is how much compute do you want to apply to the amount of data you have? Now, right now, we don't know how much data we have, but the important thing here, if you can move that slider bar from right to left, that's how easy it is to scale compute. So we'll take 400 as the default.
Okay.
And then if it turns out afterwards, if we need more compute or less compute, we just
go in here and move the slider.
That's basically it. So
okay.
The next thing we'd have to do is configure the server. And in this case, you could either create a new server or pick an existing one. So just go ahead and you can pick anything that you want in there.
All right, we'll just pick the
Japan East.
Let's go Japan East. We like Japan.
Hit select.
Okay.
Now, here's a new thing. So for source, if you expand that out, one of the things that there's two options here. You can create a DW that has no data in it.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard from a lot of people, though, they'd love to have a sample app is part of the default provisioning. So in this case, let's load up a sample app. So we'll just pick that. All it's really doing is taking AdventureWorks, and it's going to install
DW
that.
Database. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to... And then scroll down a little bit here. The last couple of things that we would need to do is enter in some admin information, how we would log in. And you'd select OK, and that's it. In a matter of just a minute or so, you'd have a DW.
So in this case, a sample DW, right? So just something I can go in and play with. In this case, the AdventureWorks DW database. Something I can go, hey, how does this work? How does my AdventureWorks or how does a SQL DW database work in the cloud?
Yeah, and you got data, you can kick the tires with it. So that's how easy it is to get started. Now let me show you something. Go ahead and hit the X button there.
All right.
Okay, collapse that blade. Collapse that blade. Now, there's a this tile here represents a BW that we have already provisioned.
Okay.
So your question was, you know, hey, how easy it is to hook Power BI in. So let's just say we have a bunch of data in our data warehouse. Now we want to visualize it.
Okay.
So to do that, go ahead and click the button that says Open in Power BI, that it's right up in here.
Oh, okay. There it is.
So what's going to happen now is we're going to go ahead and in context, let me sign in.
All right.
I'd like to have all my passwords and stuff. But I'm going to just sign in and then I'll let you keep driving here. So we're launching Power BI. It's basically a free app. As you know, this is actually going to... Okay, so in context, you'll see that we have the server name and the database.
Yep.
So I'm going to hit next. And let me just enter in a password here. All right, so we'll go ahead and sign in. So what's happening, as you see in that upper right, we're basically loading the data model from that data warehouse. So
Okay. Looks
like it succeeded, no problem. So let's go ahead and go to the dashboard. And
so what was that one we saw? Was that just a sample data, Power BI while we were loading the data?
Totally, yeah.
Okay.
If you sign up for a Power BI account, which you can get started for free, you'll end up with that sample that you can start playing around with. So let's go ahead and click on that Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So what we're going to use are these, if you expand that aggregate sales on the left hand, there you go. So. So what we're really doing now is we've been presented with all the metadata in the system, and now we want to drag certain fields over to this canvas. So the first thing we want to do is click postal code and sales amount. Now, the nice thing here is this goes to show you, man, how simple it is to hook Power BI into DW.
Okay.
Notice that we just connected to those two fields. Power BI knows what... has a good idea of what we're trying to do and just decided the visualization. So let's stretch that out across the page. Make it a little thinner because we'll put a couple more things on the bottom.
Okay.
So maybe go this way,
that way.
And then over.
Okay. Yep.
So right there goes to show you like what first party integration should be. We connect it in, we have a visualization, we now can see sales over the globe, which is pretty awesome.
We could probably drill into this too if we wanted to, right?
Totally. And then if you wanted to see, let's say, sales over time, let's go ahead and click order date and sales amount. So order date and sales amount. And then let's pick that particular chart, one up? Yeah.
Okay.
So this guy is going to load. And then that just gives you a view of how sales are progressing over time.
Yep.
And then the last thing we'll do is there's a 1, 2, 3 box. Let's just drop that in there, that guy.
Not that one, that's card.
Yeah, that's another one to the left. Yep, nope, one more.
That one?
Yep. So for that guy, let's go ahead and let's click count of row over on the right. So that will tell you how many customers that we actually have in our system. So once that gets done querying, I think it's something like 60,000 that's in the sample app.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, you know, so this is truly the power of Power BI connecting to SQL DW. We have a visualization of the map. In the lower left, we have sales over time, and then, of course, total customer count. To your point, you could click around this thing, and Power BI will repivot views for us. But when we talked about first-party integration before, this is really what we meant. But opening Power BI and being able to visualize your data that quickly is pretty awesome.
And this is powerful. This tells me, like, I'm not a Power BI guru by any stretch of the imagination, but this was within seconds or minutes, I feel like I'm being useful in Power BI, right?
Yeah.
Right to SQL Data Warehouse.
Yeah, and the interesting part over here is where you can imagine as your company grows, as your customers grow, and your sales grow, and you're looking at your Thanksgiving sales or your Christmas Day sales.
Yeah.
All you need to do is remember that slider bar.
Yep.
You just sort of increase the amount of compute and then the queries that Power BI issues against SQL DW.
Let's do it. Let's play his scenario for real.
Okay.
So go ahead and minimize this view.
And then, yeah,
Rohan's spot on here. So if you go back to the portal.
The portal?
Yeah.
Nope, not that one. Go back to the portal.
So to Rohan's point, this is what we've heard from a lot of customers. A holiday comes around. Yeah. Or let's say you're a retailer and, you know, you're trying, one of your competitors has a national sale and, you know, you'd like to sort of take a look at it. But you want to, let's say we wanted to quadruple the compute of what's on this particular instance.
Okay.
So we're back in the blade, and on the right-hand side, let's see if you can figure this one out.
Well, there's probably several things I can do. I can, here, if I click on settings, I'm going to get this. I think I would get this blade anyway, right?
Yep.
So if I want to obviously scale my data warehouse, I think I'd click on the scale right here, right? So, oh my goodness, that was hard.
Oh, man.
Wait a minute, let's do that again, because I think I blinked and missed it.
So, right? And then if you wanted to increase your performance, what would you do?
Well, I'd obviously grab the slider and move it, right? And so I'd say, well, given, I would personally go, okay, what's my order history? What's my load been over past time? And go, okay, well, you know, do I need to go to 400 DWUs? Do I need to go to 800 DWUs?
Right.
And even at that point, I'd probably think, you know, I don't care. I'd go to probably 400 DWUs and go, if that doesn't work, I can go back in here and with another couple seconds, move it even more. So it's not a, oh, am I gonna, you know, am I gonna bring the box to its knees,
but
right?
The good thing is, exactly, it's not really a guessing game that you're stuck to now. Like in the old day, hey, imagine if you had to buy a bunch of hardware and now you're stuck with it for 3 years. In this case, let's just slide it all the way over. Currently, 2,000 DWUs is where we are in public preview. It will go beyond that. Go ahead. So that's it.
Yep, just like that.
Save.
And it's instantaneous.
It's instantaneous. I mean, this is where I think the interesting part is, you know, usually a lot of the systems that are built require, you know, what we're trying to do essentially becomes a size of data operation.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, when we architected SQL DW, we said this specific thing that you just did has to be very, very fast.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's the reason where if you take a look at the fundamental design point of the architecture, the storage is very separated from compute. So you can actually, you know, and the data is partitioned right at the get-go. So if you increase the number of compute instances, all that we do is a detach and a reattach.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very fast operation.
Well, so let me ask you this, because let's say I go, shoot, I don't know what I need. You know, let's say I'm a fairly new organization and I don't have that much history to base my, so I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna go to 2,000 DWUs just so I, you know, can support the load I hope I get. But I find out, okay, I don't need that. So for maybe for a couple hours, I'm at 2,000 DWUs, and I'm like, okay, well, I can probably go down to 800 DWUs, something like that. Is this like an hour billing cycle, or is this sort of like, I'll just pay for that, just slice of time?
You really are paying for what you use, and the pattern that we see is, you'll see some workloads, so all compute has been repartitioned, as Rohan just described, so it's done, as you can see. But we see some workloads that they'll throttle compute up for something like a weekend, month end. Imagine if you're doing a quarterly earnings report, or I don't know, you're looking at your store inventory, etc. You dial up compute, and then a lot of folks will actually dial it down, you know, to 100 or 200 DWUs while dev team might be working on it. But that's the flexibility that a lot of customers ask for from the get-go. Yeah. Is just, you know, and as you proved, you can move a slider bar from left to right.
I am now a Power BI expert.
And then, you know, and to Rohan's point, you know, you just want to scale the compute. And the other nice thing here, too, is actually we can pause compute when we basically don't want to even deal with it at all.
But I think there's two things that we really have to focus on here, right? Just the how easy it is to get DW up and started. And scale,
right?
But then, how easy it is to throw Power BI, the Power BI integration on it, and get started like this? Because this was pretty easy.
Just think of the power that comes with this. Is, you know, as when we were first designing this, you know, we were talking to customers, and we heard loud and clear about, hey, it really needs to be elastic, and for the reasons we've already discussed, and hey, I really need you to separate compute and storage meters. But the other thing we heard clear from customers is, man, you have a lot of great assets in your platform, Power BI being one, ADF being another, machine learning being another, and we need it to have super simple integration, which...
Yeah, actually Azure ML is another, Azure ML is another service where you can do machine learning, you can run your machine learning models on your data stored in SQL DW, and it's very, very simple. It's the same thing, you can imagine, there you can sort of scale your compute. Yeah. A lot of these queries actually get pushed down to the data, So, you know, there's a lot of intelligence built in. You can, as you can imagine, the reason why the whole Power BI thing was so snippy is because you're not moving like lots and lots of data around. You're actually pushing down computers. Okay. Same thing happens with Azure ML, which is great.
All right. So we got a couple, a few more things to talk about. So due to time, can we move on to the next one?
Sure.
We are going to get, there are some questions coming in. We will get to the questions because that's why we do this show. We want to talk to you and answer your questions. We will get to those. Hans, we will get to your question. I think Chuck's question is an old question, so we'll get to Hans in a second. You talked about the Elastic Scale piece, and so I know there's been a lot around the Elastic Scale components, specifically things like Elastic Pool and Elastic Query. Let's talk about that a second, right? How do we think about Elastic Pool? Because we talked about it in terms of this. So how do we think about Elastic Pool?
Yeah, I'll start it off here,
sure.
And then we'll. So a demo probably is a good way to sort of. So let's get rid of these blades. And you've proven that you can get rid of blades quickly.
Right.
You're on a roll Tuesday morning here.
I am an expert.
Here.
I'm a professional.
You're an expert. Okay, so let's start with this. So why an Elastic Pool? Like, what problem is it solving? The problem is. Let's pretend Rohan's a developer building a SaaS app, and you know Rohan's going to start with one database, and then as he sort of builds out his app and his clientele, he'll go from 1 to 10 to 100 to 1,000 databases like that.
Yeah,
and we have real
customers
in the estate. I am not kidding you; they have literally gone from 1, and 6 months later, they'll have 20,000. Databases. And here's a tidbit in the spirit of Unplug that a lot of people don't know. You know, if you think of SQL database in terms of its scale, just to give you an idea, SQL database handles about 250 billion requests a day.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's crazy. That's what we're dealing with. So now with all these databases, this guy has two choices to make. Do I over-provision all of the databases, not really knowing what the workload activity is going to be, but if he over-provisions, it's for sure going to optimize for the best customer experience.
Yeah.
The problem is I would show up and be like, Rohan, you're killing our bottom line because you've over-provisioned.
Right.
Well, yeah, you got to manage 2,000 databases.
Correct.
Now you're manually managing, you know, making sure that all 2,000 databases have enough.
So there's a manual management part, and to Sean's point, I think the more important thing is each database is provisioned for peak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And
so Sean's coming to you.
I pay him a visit, and I'm like, "Hey, boss.
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? Because this can get pretty expensive." And you know, the other option he has, if he was just trying to keep the company happy, he would under provision everything. We would feel great for our bottom line, but all of a sudden our customers have a bad experience.
Yep.
Pools basically solve that problem. Takes the guesswork out of it. It sort of allows somebody like Rohan to not even have to think about that. Instead of those 2,000 databases being singletons, what if we could put them into a pool and sort of assign that pool a maximum amount of compute and then give each database a guaranteed minimum amount of compute power and a maximum burst? So those are basically the three concepts that, but here I'll just show you the demo so you can see. So if you click on this guy, the one above it.
The one above it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So here, we'll just kind of making this up as we go. Here's Rohan with 30 databases. And these are individual databases that he would have to, as it stands, you know, one could argue the provision for peak, but he would have to sort of come and look at this each and every day.
Yeah, you'd be monitoring each one. How am I doing?
Yeah, how am I doing?
Yeah.
And actually, the system, that one of the good things that, you know, sort of built is through Workload Insights. We can actually tell you, hey, of all the databases that you have, we have enough backend telemetry that actually tells you, look, these are the 30 that, you know, if you sort of put them in an Elastic Pool group, depending on the usage, and you put your peak at this DTU, you should be fine.
Yeah.
Right? You're
in
paying
fact,
a lot more for it right now.
What he's poking on is, see that little blue banner bar there?
Yep.
It says, click here for this recommendation, and basically, we have so much telemetry in the system that when Rohan as a user comes into this, or in your case, you're coming in, you're like, hey, you know, what databases should I put in a pool? We've been running machine learning against your environment, and we already have a recommendation teed up for you.
Okay.
But let me show you the slower path to it.
Just so we understand how
pools are. So you understand both.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and hit the three dots there just to, all we're doing right now is expanding the 30 databases that Rohan, you know, is managing.
As managing, yeah.
Here's how easy it is to put those databases in a pool. So let's go over there and hit add pool.
Add pool.
And then when you hit add pool, it's just going to load up this blade. Takes about a second. And there's just a there's three things that we're going to do in this blade. So the first thing we'll do is let's go ahead, leave the name there. But let's go to the pricing tier just to show everybody what's going on. So we introduced standard pools, I think it was a few months ago.
At
April timeframe, I think it was. And since then, we've introduced basic and premium pools. So now you have a choice of basic, standard, or premium. And it just goes to show you on these pricing cards the differences. And effectively, you get a ton of more compute and performance as you upscale.
Yeah.
So let's pick the standard.
Yep. Standard, select.
Select. Now, the next thing we need to do is add databases into the pool.
So what databases do I want to add to this pool, right?
Yeah. Now, as Rohan mentioned before, we're always running machine learning. So you'll see the system has already
picked.
And really, if you take a close look, what the system is basically doing is finding those databases that have a wild degree of variability.
Correct.
One day it's high use, the next day it's low use. And then let's go ahead and select those in.
Okay. So, Doctor, you notice I unselected a few already.
It could be, yeah. So let's go ahead and select these into the pool.
Okay.
By clicking select.
I did click select. Let's see. It might be taking a second. Here we go. Yep.
I actually thought you didn't click select. This guy's going to kill me today.
That's all right.
All right. And the next thing you need to do is just configure performance. So go ahead and click that. And as you know, so now imagine, you know, in this case, keep playing on Rohan here for a minute. You've put these databases into the pool. The next thing you really need to do is just give it an aggregate amount of compute.
So what's the difference between this and the, because people are going to ask this, right? What's the difference between, we went in there, we already picked the pricing tier, because I get X number of, you know, if you click on that, it says, here's your, you know, it was EDTUs or something like that.
Right.
So what's the difference between that and what I'm picking here?
So that what you're picking right now is just the overall amount of compute that the whole pool will have access to.
Yep.
So and this will change as we go through the preview, but let's go ahead and pick 800, for example.
Okay.
So it's the total amount of compute that all those databases will have access to. But we know not every database is going to use the same amount of compute.
Okay.
So the next thing we'll do is set the minimum guarantee that we want every database to have a minimum of this amount of compute, and then the max bursting. Now what you see all these tiles here from left to right, you're seeing your most active databases to your least active.
Okay.
So the settings right now of a DTU max of 100
should
work.
Good enough, yeah.
But let's pick a wrong thing. Let's go ahead and pick 50. So if we set 50 as the maximum burst, how from left to right there's about a handful of databases? So what would happen if we applied this is that those databases, as they need more compute power, they would hit the ceiling.
Yep.
And then the app would slow down.
Okay.
So let's not do that. Let's pick 100. And it looks like everything fits in that envelope. And then we can leave the DTU min of 0, which is just, and think of it as, I want it to exist at a bare minimum, use nothing.
Right.
And then you would hit select, and then that's it. And then we'll cancel out of this thing. But that's how simple it is to sort of identify databases, put them into a pool, configure a pool, and off you go.
And I can still, if I need to, at some point go, okay, you know, I'm just going to pull this one database out or put additional databases in.
And you'd see that, actually, because you can imagine, that's a great point, right? As you can see if specifically the characteristics of a specific database in the pool change and it's, you know, it's hogging the EDTUs. And you could decide to say this one deserves to be in its own pool, if you will, or it needs to be an isolated database.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're not limited to a pool on a server.
Correct. And so the idea, if you think about the future of this is going to be pretty dynamic, right?
Yep.
As things come in and go, the essential thing being, like, if I pick a set of databases, depending on the usage patterns, what's the optimal way of packing them so you don't have to sort of provision each of them for peak?
Yep.
And this is especially for, like, SaaS ISVs, like Sean said, we're starting to deal with like thousands and thousands of databases. This becomes a must-have. Without having this sort of programming pattern or an app model, it's just very expensive.
Yeah, I mean, to Rohan's point, we have real customers in the spirit of Unplugged sharing this stuff. Like just last week, we had a customer show up. He created two or three pools, and immediately had right around 1,000 databases, spread across these pools. And then we got a hold of the customer, and you know, this thing solved a real problem, because this guy was literally in this, do I over and under provision? And then when he discovered the pool group concept, he came over to SQL, a brand new customer, and literally took his entire estate, dropped it in, and you know, and off you go. And to that other point of, you know, just remember, just like we can rescale compute for DW, you can rescale compute here. If some database sort of grows up too much, you can sort of move it out of the pool. And
put it in its own pool.
You could put it into a singleton, you know?
And now you're managing a pool,
or,
you know, a lot less number of objects than 2,000 databases, right? You're saying, okay, how many databases?
You can imagine policies for the pool.
So let's just play on this one. Let's pretend one of those databases is now so critical that it needs to be in a premium singleton. It needs max throughput, et cetera. And just if you collapse this blade here, just to show folks, X this out, and just do a new SQL database.
Okay.
So you go new.
New, data and storage.
Yep.
It's like I've used this before.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see.
SQL database at the top.
There it is, yep.
There you go.
I have you.
Don't you love all these backseat drivers?
That's right.
Click.
Click.
All right, so the, you can give it a name. We won't go through the whole workflow, but maybe in this case you can just walk through some of the new. So let's say, for example, we had an application that needed maximum amount of, this isn't variable throughput. This thing always
this
needs.
So
you'll see if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see our new Premium 11 offering, which is at 1750 DTUs and about a terabyte of storage.
Yes, and this is actually the interesting part is, you know, for people who want to keep building scale-up apps, and especially as people are transitioning to the cloud, you know, the hardware that we're using in Azure to build our data centers, you know, we started off at, you know, Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 4 servers now. And as the processor speeds, as SSDs are becoming cheaper, you can see like we're introducing more and more what we call the scale-up options. Yeah. Effectively, you can have the entire box to yourself, right? That's what P11 gives you with the Gen 4. And you can imagine as Gen 5s come, they could be a P13, you know, P15 and stuff like that.
So lots of options.
So does that mean we go from P6 to P11, we're going to see some flexibility in there?
Oh, huge. Or? I mean, just in terms of the amount of resources that are dedicated to P11 is actually pretty substantial.
Okay, good. All right.
So you get up to a terabyte of storage, and
pretty cool. So we spent the majority of our time talking cloud, right, which is fantastic. We've talked SQL DW. This is just phenomenally wild and exciting, right? Then we've talked about Elastic Pool, and I think there's some huge benefit there. And you know, as you said, like people are immediately getting benefits over if they understand Elastic Pool and the benefits of, they're immediately seeing the return on investment there. P11s are great, but let's bring it back down to earth for a second, and you know, and talk on-prem, right? SQL Server. Right, so we've been dealing with SQL 2016.
CGP 2016. The feedback's been great. I mean, I hope folks are sort of trying out the monthly releases. We're sort of getting. It seems like we're getting into a rhythm over there. Great feedback from. I think the tap engagement for this release, like you know, we've been saying, has been better than any of the past releases. Just the you know feedback. CDP 3 is around the corner. You know, sort of we're working pretty hard. The team is pretty working pretty hard to make sure that the final feature set is sort of coming together.
Okay.
And there's a lot of feedback that's already gone and that's being incorporated. So it's right around the corner. And one of the interesting things is that we've done this time around is, you know, SSMS is sort of on its own monthly cadence.
Yep.
And you'll see it sort of, you know, we have the team is that our tools team is actually working very hard to, you know, get that completely componentized so that it can be individually evolved. And there's, you know, interesting amounts of client telemetry that's sort of already built in.
Yep.
And it's actually fascinating, the release that of SSMS that got, you know, released last month, for the first time had that, and somebody downloaded that and connected to SQL 2000, like 47 connections. And we are laughing about it, you know, we're like, okay, we're worried about 2005, and here you have folks that agree to 2000 as well. So no, I think that's, it's just the beginning of where, you know, where the possibilities that we see. In terms of like the richness of what we collect and how we can make the customer experience better.
Excellent.
I'm very, very excited about that.
Okay. So I think 2016 CDP3 right around the corner. I think people are getting excited. Let's wrap up with a few questions. And Hans asks a good one, specifically to some features in 2016,
correct,
right?
Right.
Is there any native JSON support in the works?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, if you essentially think about it, JSON and sort of following the same journey that XML did when we sort of introduced it back in 2005, where there was a notion of, you know, getting the sort of JSON support into the server, shredding it in the relational table, and sort of doing that, so you're able to manage it. So absolutely, I mean, you know, as there's feedback that's coming in from the system that Sean and I are looking at and saying, hey, it looks like as more and more applications start building on the JSON support, getting native indexing to work on it would be the right next step to go do. So absolutely, that's something that we're thinking.
Yeah. Good, excellent. And we've got a lot of questions. I was going through the questions through, because you for the our listening, viewing audience, they can ask post questions to our Twitter account, SQL Unplugged, or to SQLUnplugged@outlook.com. We still are getting a lot of questions, and so we're going to point them to a previous episode, because we're still getting a lot of questions around what's the difference between PaaS and IaaS, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, maybe we take another episode down the road and talk about that a little bit more. We'll point them to, I think we talked about that like two episodes ago.
Chuck. It's a great question, and we spent
almost
the entire episode on it. So I would encourage you to just go back a couple of episodes, and hey, if after watching it you still have questions, just email me directly. My email is seanbi@microsoft.com, so that's SHAWNBI@microsoft.com, and that's for anybody who's watching our show. So if we don't get a question answered for you, just send me a note, and I'll try to answer it myself if I can. I'll make sure it gets to the right person for you.
Okay. All right, next question. And we got a couple more questions, and Golan, there's a question that someone asked. I'm going to ask you to post it here before after Glenn's. Someone asked a question over email about, or I think it was actually through our Twitter account, about a gardener. Gardener's saying, and I can't remember the question, so I'm going to ask Golnaz to push that up here, but it was saying, hey, gardener's saying something that I don't think we agree with, right? So I'm going to have her post that up. But we'll get to Glenn's question here. When are you going to decide about changing or eliminating the memory and core license limits in SQL Server Standard Edition?
Yeah, I'm only smiling right now because I fully understand what that question is all about. Here's what I can say to you. The team has been working. We've been working really hard on how we're going to package, you know, how are we going to package and license things. Mm-hmm. So Rohan and I represent sort of the engineering function in terms of what we're building. We have great partners in the company from business planning and marketing, and sort of you could imagine it's a whole collection of people. So we're pretty much, we have one meeting to go. In the spirit of Unplugged, there's one meeting to go. Where we think in that meeting it should happen next week, I think it's going to settle, and I think it's going to be in a it sort of takes. Unfortunately, I can't go into details here, but I do want everybody to know your voice has been heard very loud across the system, which has resulted what in the past what would have been one meeting has now been three or four. So we're taking a real close look to make sure that the right things happen, and when it settles, it could be around the past time frame. Maybe we'll get into some more detail there, but I don't want you to think that that's a question that we're casually looking at. We're pretty seriously looking at it.
Well, and speaking of past, and we're just a quick announcement.
Yeah.
So the SQL Unplugged show is going to be at PASS.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, right?
And we'll be live at PASS. So we're going to do SQL Unplugged at PASS.
That's right.
Right. And so maybe we'll answer some of those questions.
We'll do demos, and we'll heckle you about pressing select as many times as you can.
Excellent. I can't wait to go.
That sounds good. Yeah, well, we have a session at PASS. That's right.
That's right. Yep. So we'll be doing, we'll be doing it live at PASS. So come join our session. All right. There's a question. So Hans asks, the Magic Quadrant for Operational Database Management Systems says that SQL HADR is too expensive.
Yeah. You know, I without seeing the rest of the context of that question, I mean, anytime I see something like that, Rohan and I take that stuff pretty seriously.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, our goal is to make sure that we're building the best product at the best price point. And, you know, when you really compare our HADR solution to just about anybody we're competing with, and you really look at the facts, the one thing that I can tell you is this. In 2014, we worked incredibly hard to take what used to be log shipping and mirroring and all this complexity to stand up an HA environment, we sort of put it all into one really straightforward tool. Mm-hmm. And then from that one place, you could stand up an availability group and put databases in it pretty fast. And then the cost around that in terms of, you know, the labor savings, I mean, drives way down. And our licensing costs compared to a lot of folks that we compete with is significantly less. And I'm talking about other big commercial vendors.
Yeah.
So I think we're now on the DR front, the reality is we're one of the only vendors in the world that allows you to tap into Azure. So enrolling an Azure VM with your on-prem availability group, you're paying
significantly less.
And you're achieving, we have customers that achieve DR stories for pennies on the dollar. They never even thought of it. So if you sort of add it all up, you know, I'd have to believe that there's really good price performance for the value that you're getting.
Yeah, I think the DR story is a great one. When I go talk in conferences about and show them this, you know, the DR scenario, you know, from stretching your DR from on-prem to Azure, and for the benefits and the cost savings, it's huge.
And to Sean's point, I think one of the things, you know, and this is just basically the whole Azure philosophy of being simple, is there's a ton of investment that's gone into making that whole experience of setting up an availability group, even though it's spanning continents, right?
Yep.
Super simple. Like imagine, like if you didn't have Azure, for a lot of companies, mid-sized companies, DR is setting up a data center in a different continent. I mean, just think about that.
Well,
it wasn't even an option.
There's a piece of good news here in a decision that was made last night, and I can't go into the details of this, but it has to do with this HADR.
Okay.
Like if you've bought into, you know, our on-prem SQL HA and how that sort of translates up into the cloud, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised by a choice made last night. I'm just signaling to everybody, expect some consistency there, which is I think going to be a great thing. Another thing that to let folks know is even on SQL virtual machines, like we have a template. So let's say, for example, you wanted to set up SQL Always On, but you didn't really want to configure a listener or premium storage or anything else. You don't have to, you know. There's an experience that the team is working on right now. It's supposed to ship by the end of the year. That's what they're working toward. But this is probably the most, you can go into SQL or you can go into Azure right now, go to the gallery, you can pick an always on template, and you can provision an always on availability group in literally a handful of clicks and be done. And then they're enhancing that even more to tie deeper into premium storage. So between today, you can stand one up like that, and then in a couple of months, you'll see some additional optimizations that, I mean, this makes it about as simple as it could possibly be.
Okay, so that's fantastic. All right, I think we're out of time. This has been a fantastic episode. This has been a great session. We will see you next month at PASS.
Perfect.
We're going to ask everybody, if you've got, Sean gave you his email address. If you have any questions or want more information, look, reach out to us at SQL Unplugged at SQL Unplugged. Twitter account or sqlunplugged.outlook.com or Sean or Rohan's email address. We'll be happy to answer your questions.
Yeah.
gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been fantastic. And everybody, we will see you next month.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.